Today's guest, the high content speaker who motivates, Mark Sanborn. You're listening to the Eagles Talent Connection Podcast.
Eagles Talent Connection is a speakers and entertainment bureau. To bring talent to your next event, visit us online at www.eaglestalent.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Eagles Talent Connection Podcast, and I'm your host, Sheldon Senek. My guest today is Mark Sanborn. He has gained credibility both as a speaker and a best-selling author, especially with his book, The Fred Factor. He believes leadership doesn't make a difference, but rather, leadership is the difference. Mark Sanborn, welcome to the Eagles Talent Connection Podcast.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Let's just jump right into it. Leaders come in many shapes, sizes, and philosophies. What do you think defines a leader?
You know, the easiest way to define a leader is by the results he or she produces. By your fruits, you will know them. And very often in leadership development these days, we get quite enamored with the process or what leaders do or who leaders are. And that's all important, but we need to remember that that's a means to an end. And as I often tell my clients and share with audiences, if you were to engage me to come in and assess your leadership ability, although there are a number of instruments I might use and a number of metrics I might employ, what I would do first and foremost is, with the guarantee of anonymity and confidentiality, I would talk to each of those people you lead, and I would ask them one simple question. And the question is, are you a better person because he or she is your leader? And the answer that I don't want to hear is, well, you know, I'm no worse. I mean, they don't mess me up. They don't slow me down. They don't screw me up. Those are the wrong answers. The thing that I'm looking for, and I'm going to paraphrase some of the responses that would indicate true leadership, is the person that says, you know, I thought I was pretty good until I went to work for him or her, or I've found out how much better I could be, or I've learned so much, or I'm doing things I never thought I could do before. And those are the evidences of leadership.
In the workforce today, there's a gap between the oldest generation and the youngest generation. Do you think there's a difference in how they view leadership? And if so, what do you think that is?
Well, I think there are probably some differences about how people view leadership, but I think that we need to understand that the generations are more a state of mind than a chronological age. Mm-hmm. I have several friends who do a lot of work around the differences in how generations perceive things, and so I think that we need to always remember that somebody's actual age may or may not indicate the perspectives or opinions that they hold. But I think that one of the things that younger employees in particular are probably more skeptical about is the idea that someone should be followed because of their position, status, or rank. Uh-huh. You know, I wrote a book called You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader.
Right.
Because I think most people now realize that having a title isn't what makes you a leader. You know, in a rational organization, a title should confirm leadership ability, not bestow it. Just because they give you a title doesn't make you a leader. But what I think we sometimes realize less, or not at all, is that just because you don't have a title, it should not keep you from leading. And I think that younger employees are looking for reasons to follow leaders because of their power with people, not their power over them,
right,
because of their abilities, not because of their office or status, and that there's a certain skepticism, and by the way, this is not an opinion of mine. This is borne out by very recent research data that shows that trust in organizations and leaders within organizations is at low tide. So we've got to give people substantive reasons to follow us, not just the age-old control and command. Now it's about collaborate and cooperate.
Your book, The Fred Factor, a Wall Street Journal and Business Week bestseller, almost 6 years, I think, since it's been written.
That's
remains relevant, and people are still connecting with it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because a good story transcends time. You know, if a story is good, it's not just because it's my story or your story or someone else's story. All stories are our stories. You know, when we recognize ourselves, when we recognize application, or a story reminds us of something we've experienced or someone we know, that engages us. And the story of Fred is such a simple but powerful true story about a postal carrier in Denver, Colorado, still delivering mail, by the way, mm-hmm. who has what could easily be the most dead-end and monotonous job in the world, putting mail in a box day after day. Right. And he brings artistry and passion and creativity. He builds relationships with his customers. He creates values. And it's my opinion, and this isn't based on quantitative research, but my own kind of intuition and hunch, my opinion is that the reason the story is so timely is because it kind of knocks the legs out from underneath the excuse that I'm not Bill Gates, I'm not Steve Jobs, I don't work for a big company, I don't have a big budget, I don't get trained, et cetera, et cetera. And Fred is proof, and I think this is so important and underlies so much of my work, that nobody can prevent you from choosing to be extraordinary at an individual or at an organizational level.
You know, relationships seem to be such a big component of leadership. How do we even begin to build relationships?
Well, I think first we need to become students of relationship, because most of us were never taught how to have relationships. And I survey my clients, and rarely does anybody say, oh, yeah, we took a course in college or a graduate level course, or after we got our job, they put us in relationship building 101. You know, we were kind of expected to watch other people and figure it out until we realized later in life that the other people we were watching didn't know what they were doing either.
Right.
So what I think we need to do, and I do this in several of my books, but notably in The Fred Factors, I talk about the keys to relationship building in the workplace. You know, what is appropriate? How do we build healthy relationships? Because what's so critical about that is not only do we often not know how to do it, but it's ultimately what differentiates our products and services. In a world where there are many products and services that are either similar or identical to what we sell, it's the relationship that is the ultimate differentiator. And yet, you know, we say to employees, you know, build a better relationship with your customers and colleagues, but regrettably, we never explain how.
Today, you know, I believe we are so interconnected with technology, so much so that we want instant gratification. For example, management wants employees to give the ROI now, or on the flip side, employees want instant recognition. Do you think there's more pressure to lead now than, say, 10, 20 years ago, or has the pressure just taken a different shape?
Well, that's a good question, because I don't know that anyone's ever kept an index of leadership pressure or stressors, but I think we could logically conclude that given the demands of the marketplace, given the economic challenges, given the increased complexity of the world that we live in, that there is more pressure on leaders to perform. Mm-hmm. You know, it was several years ago that Business Week put on their website a lead article that was entitled Perform or Perish. And I think that when you consider that leaders today aren't just being asked or encouraged to produce results, they're being expected and demanded to produce results, that does create a great deal of pressure. Shareholders expect more. Equity firms that own our companies, the people we report to, the expectations are great. And I guess the double whammy isn't just that there's more pressure to lead, but that it's harder to lead because of the circumstances that we find ourselves in.
In one of your blog posts, you wrote about a panel I believe you sat on, which included other highly successful people, and you wrote the following about those people. Not only do they share, they increase their expertise and abilities in sharing. A wonderful synergy takes place when they help others. People learn from the successful, but the successful not just learn from the people they teach, but from the teaching process itself. Would it be correct to say that sharing knowledge is so essential to being a good leader?
I believe it definitely is essential. The problem is that often we share knowledge and we don't go very deeply in how we share it. You know, it becomes a monologue instead of a dialogue. And the great leaders that I've worked with, and I've been fortunate both in my contact with leaders that are clients, as well as interviews that I've done, panels I've been on, programs I've appeared on, I'm always struck by the general characteristic of curiosity. I am often reminded of this when I meet someone who's a very successful leader in corporate America or leads a large organization, and as I ask them questions, you know, maybe my charge was to interview them or to write an article or to draw them out for a panel, they ask me questions, whether it's a one-on-one conversation or a group dynamic, because they know that there's only so much that they can gain from disseminating information, and that as they inquire, as they, as you mentioned in that quote that, that I wrote about, as they interact, you know, it goes back to that fairly common phrase we hear now, that an idea is the only thing that increases in value and size when it's shared.
There's a new television show on that has gained a lot of attention, most recently from Oprah. It's called Undercover Boss. It's truly a fascinating look at bosses going undercover to work in the front lines of their company. The reason I bring this up with you is because I think it actually is a pretty good example of what you call the big L and little L leaders. First, can you share who the big L leaders are and the little L leaders are and how they both play a part in successful leadership?
Sure. A big L leader is someone who is charged with the responsibility of leading, and they typically have titles. And in the show Undercover Boss, that would be the CEO or the VP who goes out to find out what life is like in the trenches. And by the way, I don't know whether to give them an A for courage or an A for audacity, because if they don't know what's going on in the trenches, that instantly, in my mind at least, creates a certain amount of skepticism about their credibility and ability.
Right.
But the little L leaders are the people that these undercover bosses go out to visit. They're the man or woman on the front line. They don't have a title. They have a job description. They might have a position, but they don't have any status. And interestingly, and I think why the show is so interesting, is because these are the people that create the perception of our brand. These are the people who build or destroy relationships. Right. These are the people that deliver results or disappoint customers. And I guess at a philosophical level, at least I applaud the fact that we see that there's that it's critically important for us as leaders to be in touch with the reality of our organization and how we interact with customers.
How did you begin in the speaking industry?
I got interested in speaking at a very young age when I entered a 4-H contest at the ripe old age of 10. I entered a 4-H safety speaking contest, gave a speech on hunting knife safety. By the way, that's still a very popular topic today for me, that lasted somewhere between 3 and 5 minutes. And the truth is, I did abysmally. I bombed. I really can still remember the humiliation and shame I felt as a 10-year-old at not doing a good job. And that got me interested in learning how to speak and communicate. And I entered a lot of contests, and I got involved in youth leadership, culminating in my national presidency of the FFA, which at the time was known as the Future Farmers of America. However, I had a lot of good ideas, but I was limited in terms of my life experience and my chronological age. So after spending some time in sales and marketing in the publishing industry, I coupled my love of leadership, service strategy, and business with my ability to communicate. And so that was kind of the Reader's Digest version of how I got interested first in the spoken word and later in the written word, and then how I coupled that with my experiences and insights from both direct and vicarious experience.
Well, you have come a long way from the
4-H.
Well, who are some of the leaders who have or continue to inspire you?
I get asked that frequently because I think people expect me to mention some of the media darlings, some of the titans, and the really well-known leaders. And certainly I read about those people and have learned from them. Often I've learned as much from what they did wrong as what they did right. You know, you can learn from a bad example as well as a good example.
Right.
But some of the people who have most impacted me are people that listeners to this podcast would have no familiarity with. They're men and women who, I wouldn't say they labor in obscurity, but they labor in anonymity. You know, they're not household names. They're people who mentored me in college or in my first job. You know, my first boss, I was fortunate, was an excellent manager and leader. Today, he is a consultant in the direct marketing business, but I often bump up against lessons I've learned from him. I think about my good friend Charlie Tremendous Jones, who was first and foremost a dear friend, but secondly, he was a mentor and somebody who was fairly well known to the speaking community and who ran a company called Executive Books, now called Books for better living. Mm-hmm. But Charlie was one of those people who was incredibly relational and incredibly transparent, and always willing to share both the successes and the failures, you know, the joys and the pains in his life. Uh-huh. So from people who you know, no one would know of, to people like Charlie Jones who might be familiar to your listeners, I've been fortunate in that I've run into some people who were interested enough to build into my life, and I might add, two of my biggest mentors that I've learned the most from are both dead Brits, C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton, who I still to this day read extensively the writings that both of those people left behind.
Your book, You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader, it brought up an odd analogy in my mind, childbirth. Although an exhilarating...
that's an odd one for you and I to talk about. We're on thin ice here.
Although it's an exhilarating moment, when it happens, it's only the beginning. Now comes the next 18-plus years. So I also think of that when you take on a leadership role. I don't think it's any different. You can be given the title, but my question is, what happens next?
That's the jumping-off point, and hopefully, I would just step back a step or two and say that hopefully before you were given the title, you were also given some training, and you were able to evidence the ability to influence others without a title. Mm-hmm. And that, I know, doesn't always happen in organizational America or global business, but that's as it should happen. I think the first key is that as leaders, we're all accountable to someone, whether it's a shareholder or a leader further up the organizational org chart. We're obviously, or I should say less obviously, accountable to the people we lead. So I think the beginning point is to find out, number one, what is expected of me? You know, what will it take to pass the course? Right. And then number two, what will it take to get an A in the course? But beyond that, you know, I think that you could make a pretty good case that an effective manager would at least meet and or exceed expectations. I think the big question of leadership is, what do I want to change and or improve for the better? You know, the Germans say all progress is change, but not all change is progress. And mm-hmm. I think leaders know that. They pick carefully the initiatives and agendas that they implement above and beyond what needs to be done each day, because we only have a limited amount of time and energy and expertise in each day. So I would begin with expectations, and then I would move to the question, where do I want to make the biggest difference? What is, and not just how can I contribute, because I meet leaders all the time that ask that, and the answer to that question is there are thousands of ways you can contribute. Mm-hmm. I think good leaders ask the question, how can I best contribute? Because mm-hmm. that keeps them in the sweet spot between their passion and the needs of the organization or the community around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that kind of brings up in my mind a question about value. At the end of the day, what's more important, the resume or the legacy?
Well, I would vote legacy for the simple reason that as soon as you retire, your resume is worthless, and yet your legacy outlives you. As a matter of fact, a good legacy outlives the actual lifespan of the person who has that legacy.
Right.
Certainly, I'm a pragmatist. I think, you know, a resume is important because it documents what you've done and will be helpful in pursuing other work at another organization mm-hmm. should you choose to do so. The problem is that it's a little limited because, for instance, a resume focuses on what you learned. I think your legacy is much more about what you taught. And while a resume may focus on the accomplishments you achieved, your legacy is about the things that you contributed. And they're both important. I never suggest that people do one or the other, but that they do both. Mm-hmm. The contemporary problem is most people don't really think about their legacy until they get very close to retirement, and that's late in the game. I think that the earlier legacy, you know, what we want to be known for, what will make a lasting difference, I think the earlier that comes into our awareness, the better off we'll be in creating a legacy we'll be proud of.
Mark, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, and you've given us so much to think about.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I always enjoy working with Eagles Talent. We've done a lot of great work with a lot of great clients over the years.
If you're interested in bringing Mark Sanborn into your next event, simply visit our website at www.eaglestalent.com or give us a call at 1-800-345-5607. Again, I've been your host, Sheldon Senek. I hope you join us again next time on the Eagles Talent Connection podcast.